drop this bomb, everyone would fucking blow up. Everyone would be like, Nintendo can do no wrong. My gods have come to me. And I love them. We worship you. We offer this virgin child. Or virgin child. We offer this... we offer this virgin to the Nintendo gods, for they have done nothing wrong. Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 39 of the Thought Patrol podcast. Our weapons are sharpened, food buffs are active, and we are preparing for the next hunt. Your elite crew of Monster Hunters for tonight is your host, Kyle, and co-host, Sam, joining me today over the Discord. So, how you doing, Sam? How's everything been going with you?
Pretty good. I had an interesting last 24 hours. Nothing crazy. So, I started overnight again.
Oh, God.
That lovely time. But as a peace offering from our manager... He decided to let us come in, clock in, and watch the Super Bowl on the clock. Once we got done, then we could get back to doing work.
What? So
that was really nice.
That was cool.
And he also got us food for us, so that was really cool. So it was just a way of saying thanks for, you know, sticking
doing the graveyard shift.
Yeah.
We know it sucks. Yeah.
Hey, yeah. And then I had a little bit of car trouble. When I went to work last night, my car decided to start stuttering and I think misfiring, and I was like, oh crap. Check engine light came on, you know, the whole dreaded thing.
Yeah.
Took it to our family mechanic, and he looked at it. He did a few things here and there, and it's working fine now, but we'll just have to see, because it's okay. It's just there's a possibility it could act up again, but again, it's working fine now, so hopefully I won't have any more issues. But yeah, interesting day or whatever. But other than that, it's not too bad. Past week was pretty cool. Got Monster Hunter finally.
Nice.
I'm really excited about that. I know we'll talk about that later. I also was on a podcast yesterday with Ren from our It's Obvious community. I was on his podcast. That was really, really fun.
That's the
crit. Yeah.
Okay.
That was really fun. Was going to do, they usually do a Skype call and they did video, but for some reason my webcam messed up, so they can only hear my voice. They couldn't see me, but really, really fun. Got to talk with those guys. I've listened to their podcast before. So it was really cool. Got to talk to them a little bit afterwards. All really nice guys. We had a good discussion. We talked about 2017 last year and gaming and stuff. So
cool.
That was quite a bit of fun. And then other than that, nothing really crazy. I watched Super Bowl last night. Glad the Eagles won. I'm so glad the Patriots can just take they won't win another one. Hopefully they won't win for a while, because I think Brady might be done. I don't know. We'll see. But I'm glad that someone else won for a change. So, and but yeah, that was pretty much last week and a couple of days. So
nice. I did not watch the game, but I did hear about the ending through memes. So that's good. The memes always keep me up to date. So I was able to surmise that they had lost the game, which is it was like 44-30 something.
It was 41-33.
That was close enough.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, I don't like either teams, and I'm not really a big fan of football, but.
Right.
So, whatever happened, happened. I watched a little bit of the commercials. I watched the Puppy Bowl beforehand, and then I went upstairs. Hashtag Puppy Bowl is better than a Super Bowl. So.
Did you see any of the commercials at all? Or
I saw the Tide one. With the guy from Stranger Things. I saw that commercial.
Yeah.
That was
pretty good.
I saw the Ram commercial for it was like poking fun at the Vikings.
I saw a little bit of it, but I didn't see the rest of it. I only saw like a glimpse of it. I didn't get to see the rest. I'll have to look it up later, but some of it. Yeah.
What else? I don't remember. I didn't watch the whole game, so I haven't heard of any of them that were
fantastic. There were Like, again, it seems like they're being hit and miss, because that is actually one of the things to look forward to when you watch it, because, you know, you get the usually the best of the best, or you get at least, you know, pretty good ones, but they've just been falling flat lately. There was an Alexa one that was okay. It was kind of like Alexa was sick, and so they had celebrities take over, and they had some like people to ask her questions and stuff, and some of them were like, you know, being
jerks. Didn't that air before the Super Bowl? I think I saw that on YouTube.
Part of it did, but then the full one
film
in between. And then they showed the new Solo trailer.
Oh yeah, and I saw the Avengers trailer too.
Yeah,
that looked pretty dope.
I'm actually excited for Han Solo, because apparently, and I know there's history with him in the expanded universe, but apparently he's going to join the Imperial Academy to become a pilot, because they ask him what branch is he going to be in, and he said pilot. So I'm thinking he's going to join the Academy, and then he's going to get caught up in something, and then he's going to, you know, do something. And then they showed Donald Glover, aka Childish Gambino.
Yeah, he's Lando now. Right?
Lando, yeah. So there was a woman in the trailer. I didn't know who she was supposed to be. You saw a picture of Chewie and Han standing next to each other. You saw glimpses of the Millennium Falcon in its glory days. So we'll just have to see. It's only 45 seconds, so they'll probably show a few more, because it's coming out in May, which is really soon. So hopefully we'll see some more trailers or something, because I think I'm actually excited to see this one.
Yeah, I think I'll go see it, probably. I don't know how to feel about it. We'll see what happens. I haven't delved into any of the expanded universe content that was revoked of its status for being canon. So I don't know who this will make happy, who this will piss off. Especially with rabid fans, you never know. It could go either way.
Yeah.
So I'll probably go see it. I just don't really have. I'm not hyped for it yet. But I thought the Avengers trailer was cool. I like that we got to see. I heard the thing. What is it called? It's like the Blood Edge armor for Iron Man. Is it Blood Edge?
I'm thinking. It looked like the Hulk Buster. But I could be wrong.
A special type of armor that Iron Man develops. Inputs nanomachines into his blood. Is it Blood Razor? I think it's Blood Razor or Blood Edge armor. Blood Razor, that's League of Legends. come on. Blood Edge? It's something.
Oh, Bleeding Edge.
Bleeding Edge?
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, Bleeding Edge armor. Here, let me...
This is Mark 37 armor.
Yeah, I was in... Oh God, please no videos. And basically, from what I understand, the way the armor works is he inputs nanomachines into his blood, and they build they create the armor, and it comes from his blood. Oh, here we go. Mm-hmm. The Bleeding Edge was made of a technology that allowed the suit to be stored inside of his bone marrow. This made it possible to have his Iron Man armor with him at all times. All he needed to do was give a mental command, and the suit would actually bleed out onto his body. The suit continued the trend of blurring the line between Stark and armor. With all the circuitry and armor built into his own body, he had effectively turned himself into a cyborg of sorts. So, I thought that was really cool. I have a feeling he's probably going to die, so I don't know. They probably won't delve into that idea of what are you actually human now, or are you just a man made out of metal? They probably won't go that far, especially since just a superhero movie. But that is cool that they give kind of that ode. It's these are shit's going real kind of days, so we need to be prepared. And that the fact they're busting out more advanced versions of the armor, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that's one thing about Tony Stark, is that he's always pushing the boundaries of technology, and he's always trying to find the best possible armor and keeping going, because he's had a few evolutions in the movies and in the comics, but this is his most ambitious one, because if I'm not mistaken, I think he gets infected in the comics with some virus, and it affects his armor or something like that, and I'm thinking that might be in the Infinity War, somehow it gets infected, but who knows. I don't know how much of that they're actually following, because I never really read any of the Thanos storylines in the comics. I read some Wikipedia about him and his origins and stuff and everything, but nothing comic book wise. So We'll have to see, but I am really excited about it. And, you know, again, I'm excited, but I'm also nervous because they have so much going on in the movie. They have so many characters, and they have so many people vying for the different fronts. Like, you've got people in Wakanda, you've got people fighting Thanos directly. So it's gonna be an interesting how they're gonna portray this and how they're going to give even screen time for all the actors and how they're gonna interweave everything. So
yeah,
we'll just have to see.
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped. I mean, I could say I'm definitely excited for this film. I mean a lot of people are getting to the point where, okay, it's getting old, but they are kind of bringing it down, kind of wrapping up this big ass arc that we'd have over the last 10-15, I don't know. When did the first Iron Man come out? Because I was kind of
2008.
Like, okay, so 10 years. Yeah. The last 10 years of story, movies, comics, or not comics, but just in general, the lives that they built in this expanded universe is all coming up to a wrap within these final two Avengers films.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're moving into the next phase. So it's cool to see that something that we've been growing with come to a close and see how that all wraps itself up. Mm-hmm. So definitely excited. We also have, we saw the trailer for Solo, which is, when is that? That's summer, right? That comes out?
It's Memorial Day.
Okay. Yeah. All right, cool. Cool stuff. Yeah, definitely pumped. I'm pretty sure my dad's a huge Star Wars fan. I could say I am a Star Wars fan, not a gigantic one, but he's going to be all over that. So we'll probably go see that together. Definitely excited.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you're doing well. I'm glad that you could join me. We are recording this on a Monday night because yesterday was Super Bowl Sunday. We had people over. It was just very hectic, very hectic. We could not get a chance to record. So that we're doing it Monday night. So that's why I'm sure you guys could all figure that out. So we're glad to be here. We're glad to be talking to you guys again. I think my week's been pretty good. Nothing completely out of the ordinary. Just been doing, again, school and work, kind of just trudging through all that. And just every day, it's kind of more of, I go do the stuff I have to do, look forward to the stuff I can do in my free time, and then do that shit in my free time. So I've been playing a shitload of Monster Hunter. Not as much as I would hope, so I don't get a lot of time, but I'm probably sitting around 23-24 hours in at this point, so I'm quite a ways in, and I'm enjoying the game a lot. We are going to, once we get through the news and all the other stuff, we will sit down and talk about everything that we like about this game. I've been a huge fan of the series for quite some time. I've been playing it for the past 10 years. I remember I started with Freedom back on the PSP, so just... excited to see it finally come to consoles. That way it's more access to everybody. It's so crazy that last year we had Persona 5 came to consoles, huge breakout hit. Everyone fucking adored it. One of the biggest launches it's had in its history of being games. And now we have a bunch of new fans to this series of games. And now we're getting Shin Megami Tensei later in the year, mm-hmm. or hopefully later this year on the Switch. And now we have Monster Hunter. A game that's relatively small. It's been small throughout its entire life cycle. Mm-hmm. There's been a very core, dedicated fan base to playing it. And now it's had this huge breakout success. It came out at a perfect time. Nothing else coming out early in the year. nothing to take the hype away from it. Even to the point where people are calling it the Destiny killer at this point because of everything that's happened with Destiny 2. And then you have a game that's not exactly the same, but kind of has a focus on the same thing of a grind, acquiring loot, buffing up your character, doing stuff like that. And everyone's all over this game because it does a much better job of mm-hmm. creating a grind. And I know a lot of people use that word in like kind of like a, well, not everyone, but people use that word in like a negative context. But I think this game does a very good job of creating a desire and an easy way of accessing that. I mean, later on, it becomes difficult when you have to hunt the same monster that's hard as fuck multiple times to get his set. But it always, the creativity in both the levels and the armor, everything about it, it's really good. Again, I'm thinking about this. I wonder if we should just do it now instead of just leaving it, cutting it in half and doing it later. We'll do that and then we'll end with the news afterwards.
All right. So
we'll talk about it now. Because I feel like it'd be kind of like a cock tease almost in a way where we start talking about it and then just leave it for an hour down the line.
And you know us, we don't want to tease anybody.
Yeah, exactly. This episode will be a little bit shorter because we're kind of strapped for time. So it'll be about an hour and a half around there. So we won't have a game segment, but we'll still have news. We'll still talk movies a bit, and we'll obviously the main topic's Monster Hunter, so we'll get into that. Sam, how long have you been playing? Or is this your first Monster Hunter?
I will say it's my first full dive into Monster Hunter. I have been watching it from afar. I did play the demo of one of the games on the 3DS. It was really hard to get into because of the limitations of 3DS and how
it wasn't the prettiest game.
It was very clunky. Very clunky controls. It was really hard to maneuver. And it wasn't very pretty. I mean, it was good for what it was. I mean, it was, you know, they were doing the best they could with it. But and I didn't play the Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate on Wii U, which I heard was pretty decent. But I never got that one. So this is my first Monster Hunter game that I've gone into. So from a newbie's perspective, and now, like I said, I've seen this from afar. I know about it. It is, like you said, it's very, very pretty. It's very beautiful. Now, I don't have a PS4 Pro or anything like that, 4K TV, but still on a regular TV and on a regular PS4, it runs very smoothly. There's no hiccups or anything like that. Very detailed. I do like the sort of this like contrasting, like, you know, you have all the seriousness, you have all these graphic details, but there's still some, I guess you say there's some humor to it.
Yeah, I don't want to distinctly call it like a Japanese touch, but that's like kind of like the flamboyantly animated characters.
Yeah.
There's like craziness that goes in that way. But there also, I think the localization team did a good job of making it, mm-hmm. it feel like it's not too heavy on that stuff. Like,
right.
Like you'll see it in the characters. There's some moments here and there, but they have a lot of genuinely just funny and interesting NPCs that you stumble across. Throughout your progress of the story, especially our boy Meow Skiller Chef.
Oh yes,
he's my favorite NPC. Max Gaines, man. I love how when you walk by his base thing, where his little what's the word I'm thinking of, man?
His oven set.
There's a certain word for it in game, and I forget what it is. But he's like, "Are you ready to get your pre-hunt on? Almost like a pre-workout,
yeah.
So you get some, come get some protein before you go out."
Yeah.
He's such a bad, and he always like has his arms crossed, like got the scar over one eye, and it's just this big ass buff cat. I fucking adore it. It's awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely feel you with that. That there is just kind of just this, a little bit of an accent of like you get that things are like. I don't really know exactly how to explain it, but I know where you're coming from with it. It does feel like a Japanese game. You can sense it the way that it goes about with its comedy. So,
yeah, and you know, I really enjoy that it kind of gives a little comic relief to sort of the seriousness of it because, I mean, there's not much of a story here. I mean, all we're going on is that we're just trying to follow this huge we're basically chasing a volcano pretty much. And there's not too much of it. I mean, you get some story from descriptions and sort of in the beginning, but I mean, really there's no like overlaying like need. I don't know. There's probably lore that I could probably look up and stuff, but you know, what's the reason for hunting them? What's the reason why we're doing this? And I'm sure there is, but most of it seems to be, fueled by research, understanding these creatures and knowing what they are, which I have to say, that's one thing I enjoy too, is that there's so much complexity to everything you can do in this game. I mean, you can straight up buy items, you can plant, all sorts of fauna and flora, or excuse me, flora. You can't plant
a monkey in the ground.
that's cool. You can also, there's also just a lot of variety and there's a lot of options to do what you want, which I enjoy because you don't have to necessarily, you know, follow the main storyline right away. You can do a bunch of all these investigations. You can do all sorts of other things, which gives it a variety, you know, and that's what I enjoy about some of those games. And of course, the what I feel like gives it a great way of this game does is the weapon system. I love the weapon system.
It's fantastic.
I'm glad that they have a set number of weapons or weapon types, and then of course you can then upgrade. And I really enjoy the level up tree. I love the upgrading tree. Is that it's not necessarily that one is better than the other. Well, it's obvious though, but I love their specializations. There are, you know, if you want to get water based attacks, or if you want to get fire based attacks, or if you want more power, if you want more affinity to a certain element, it really does give you ways to customize it, and I love that. The armor sets are awesome. I think it's just amazing that you can take pieces from a monster, craft it into really sick armor, and there's just amazing sets of armor.
I love how not only like in a lot of games where you do get armor sets and you build it up and stuff like that, for the most part in most other games you'll get one set and it defines, it looks exactly the same for both male and female. I love in these games that when they create an armor set, you have a male and female counterpart. So depending on whatever monster, they basically had to design two separate sets for every monster following the same theme in creating these armor sets, which is so cool because you can literally play the game a second time and you have a whole new set of armors to go through based on every monster if you want to check out all of them. Like if you're a big fan of either like Kaiju, or which is basically just big monsters, or like just decking your character out, if you're a big fan of customization, holy shit, you have a lot here to do. And like you were saying with the weapons and the way that the tree is, I like how the tree is, you always start small and you work your way up. And I like how it's cool that after a certain point, you can branch out, but you can't always go all the way back, because you can revert upgrades and they'll give you back your materials, but you can't revert all the way back to like your base item. Sometimes you'd have to go to a point where you'd have to recreate it and then rebuild, but build purposely.
Right. Like,
you'd have to move in the direction that you want to. Now, it doesn't mean that you can hit a tree where it's just shitty weapons. They're all good weapons, but they all, again, like you were saying, have a purpose. If you need, again, electricity, if you need blast, which is a really good affinity, if you need a better sharpness, some trees have higher sharpness than others, or their sharpness lasts longer. It's all like a purposeful build, but the thing is it's just presented to you in a way where you have a freedom to explore if you want to. You can sit down, you can spend 50 hours playing dual blades, but say you have a bunch of friends come on and all four of you are using dual blades, so you want to be unique or something, you can just straight up you take some of your leftover parts that you have that you don't really necessarily need, build a new item, and you're sitting at, you can instantly switch between any class, and they all play not an integral, but they all have a certain role that they fulfill. Each and every item is unique, and as some may be simpler than others, they all have a form of complexity to them. There's always something that you're working towards doing in a fight to optimize your damage potential or optimize your role's potential. And some of the weapons get pretty deep, and a lot of them, they're not just openly like told to you. And even I've heard people just going out and looking up videos, and there's people making videos all over the place because this game is huge right now. And they'll go out and research. I like that they give you a training arena so you could sit down and really like get acquainted with the weapon and kind of fully understand what you're trying to do. They'll give you, again, a basic idea, and a lot of it from there is either researching it through the internet or sitting down and trying to fully understand it, almost like a fighting game character.
Yeah, and that's what I did is I had a bow. I've been using a bow because that's what I enjoy most. Games like this, like high fantasy, you know, adventure games, And I was trying to find the Anajath, or Anajath, how you say it?
I love
the
him.
Big T-Rex, pretty much.
Yeah, the hairy T-Rex, the Anjanath. Yeah, he's cool.
Pretty much. And the bow I was using was doing pretty decent damage, but I was just like, man, I wish I could use the power coating, because the power coating for the arrow gives it a pretty big boost. So I was fiddling around with it, and certain bows can only have certain coatings. Like the one I had, which was, I believe it was the Blooming Arch, which is based from the Peku Peku, or
the Pookie Pookie.
Pookie
Pookie, that's what we call him. I don't know what his act. I think Pookie. We call him the Pookie Pookie because it's cute sounding.
He's like the, he looks like a chameleon, like mixed with a bird or something like that.
Yeah, kind of like a chameleon mixed with a what are those birds that have like the really exquisite feathers that look like
their faces?
Yeah, kind of like a chameleon,
it's a chameleon peacock, yeah.
Yeah, I know, and that sounds disgusting, and believe me, it is disgusting. He looks fucking awful. I'm not gonna lie.
But yeah, like I was using that one because it gave me the highest, you know, it had the highest attack output. But I noticed that I wasn't doing as much damage, so I was going through and I actually found that the Iron Bow 3 with power coating actually does a little bit more damage, not a lot, but a little bit more. And then I noticed when I did my ultimate, which is the Dragon Piercer, I love that move.
Is that thing where you like spin around and pull a bow yeah. all the way back, and it does like this anime like, thing kind of going off?
It's like, it's like when you're basically striking a match with his arrow and then just releasing it. So I was in the training area and I was just mixing around. I was like, man, this does a lot more damage. So I went with, you know, a more simpler, like in the earlier tree, using this bow, because it gave me more damage output, which is what I was looking for, because I didn't have anything that could really, you know, fight fire technically, because he's fire based, and I didn't really have anything that could go good against fire. So I would just let me go damage output, and I switched it, and I did a whole lot better. Of course, you know, the first few times I fought him, I wasn't doing very great, but definitely learning, that's another thing, is learning their attack patterns, and each of them have different tells and different opportunities to interrupt them and stuff. Like the one that wasn't necessarily difficult, but the one that kept me on my toes was the Kodachi, the electrical
Squirrel. Like flying squirrel. Exactly, that's what he looks like. He looks like a fucking electric flying squirrel.
And he was really interesting to fight. What got me was that I had a few times where he would fly down, I would dodge, and then he would whip his tail and it hit me, and I'm like, dang, I've got to look out for that. So it's you learn throughout the fight that, you know, it's not just one simple thing. They can do multiple things, and you have to sort of anticipate where you're going to be and what you should do. So I really enjoy that aspect. It's definitely not easy. I mean, eventually, like, you know, the Great Jagras, super easy now. I can definitely kill him easily. No problem. But when it gets, these newer monsters are just getting harder and harder, and not necessarily harder in amount of HP or in the amount of like armor, but just in different ways. Cause you know, some of them will do different tactics. Some of them will, implement their surroundings, their environment. The Joratus, the water-based monster.
The Mr. the mud slug thing.
Pretty much. Yeah. He will go into water, and you don't know what he's going to do. Is he just going to pop up, or he's going to do that weird spiraling corkscrew that comes up from the bottom? So you have to sort of, you know, judge and wait and sort of learn the pattern as you're fighting, because, or you can die and then try again.
Yeah, another cool thing about his design and his fight is as you watch, a lot of it is you can learn a lot by just watching the monster for like the first couple minutes of the fight. And while obviously he's a pain in the ass because he likes to stick to water and it slows you down because your character's wading through water lugging a big fucking weapon around. Mm-hmm. You're very vulnerable in that state. So again, the game gives you different methods to solving this problem. Eventually you get the aquatic mantle, which makes you run at a normal speed through water, but at that point you don't have it. So you have to kind of improvise. And if you watch him, he has this, I found this out just while running around, because the part I'm at, I'm like researching for this ancient dragon, and he leaves track. He's been leaving tracks everywhere on all the maps, and I have to. I'm like researching him, but I haven't seen him yet. I just have to research his tracks hidden throughout all over the place. But so while I was doing that, I'm just kind of wandering around the maps, just, you know, enjoying myself, walking around, looking at the locales. All the maps are really cool because they all are very different from one another. And a lot of them, I say in the way that they are designed are creative. Maybe not the theme to them, like, oh, hey, you have your forest. Oh, hey, you have your desert. Besides one of them called the Coral Highlands, which is my favorite fucking area because it's literally just it's a forest, but it's all made out of coral. And I don't know if you're there yet, but it is so gorgeous. When you get there, Sam, it is so pretty. Oh, God. Discord, no. I'm sorry about that. You know, I try. 1 second. I try to be, I can't even think of the word I'm saying. I'm so flustered. And I dropped my pen! Where'd it go? There we go.
Oh, all right. Man.
Sorry about that, everybody. You know, we try here. What was I even saying? Oh, so you, all the locales. Oh, yeah. The Coral Highlands is my favorite area because, again, it's just a forest and it's made out of coral. Everything's made out of coral, but it's all above ground. And the coolest part is if you look up at the skybox, which all the skyboxes are gorgeous in this game, if you look up at the skybox, it looks like you're literally underwater. Like the sky has like that effect that when you're that like if you were to go in your pool and look up with the sun shining on it, it has like that effect kind of. So it feels like you're underwater the entire time, but you're above ground. Such a cool level, such a cool idea for a level. And it's just so gorgeous. All the creatures are kind of themed to look like underwater. Like they have these really pretty hummingbirds that are pink, that are like that look like they're made out of coral that fly around. Another thing about the animals, one really cool thing that someone told me, is they introduced a capture net as an item that you just have. And if you're walking around and you see a cool looking animal, or anything that's an animal, you can capture it. And you could literally hold it in your inventory and you can actually have it in your room, the room that they give you. So I captured one of the hummingbirds and I have him in my room. So every time I go to my room, I see this little hummingbird that's technically my pet. Like I've done it with a bunch of things. You can capture the flash flies, the ones that you could use as stun grenades. And you could capture the paratoads, the sleep toads. Even if you see like a weird like lizard. I saw like this like rainbow lizard on one of the trees in the ancient forest or whatever it's called. I just caught it. And hey, I have it and I can put it in my room. And it's just so, it's really cool looking the way that they are. But it also has its own purpose. Like the flash flies, like I was saying, you can capture them in this net. It will make it an item in your inventory. And you can craft flashbangs that you can carry with you with them. And you can use them. They're like. I don't know if you put them in your slinger or you could actually toss them. I haven't done it yet because I know if you like grab thunderbugs, you could turn them into like things you put in your slinger and you fire them, and they're like launchable flashbangs, which is really cool. But again, it's like the game likes to reward those who again pay attention. So like in that fight that we were talking about with the Gyratos, whatever he's called. When he moves through the water, if he's covered in mud, which is in certain parts of the fight, what he'll do is when he moves through the water, the mud will leak off of him and it will create an actual path for you to move through the water above the water. And you can use that to your advantage to hit him on a, like where everyone's on kind of a level playing ground because you're standing above water. You're not slow as shit. The same thing comes with a lot of them. A lot of the monsters have little tells in them so that kind of show you, even if it's for a split second, this is the next attack that's coming.
Right.
Like the Anjanath, you'll see that when he gets like flustered and he's about to start using his fire, his neck will start to glow. And again, that might not be subtle, but it's still something showing you, hey, if I'm weak to fire, I have to get ready to start dodging or start paying attention to that next attack that's coming so I don't get butt fucked. Because I remember the first time I fought him. That fire attack that's just straight flamethrower, it one-shot me. I'm like, well then, okay, I'm dead. I got to go back to camp. So they definitely reward those who are observant, especially when it comes to understanding where things are located. because as it gets later in the game and you start need to start creating drinks that will help you with buffing you, like demon drugs or adamant seeds or things that buff your character so you have a better chance in these fights, it's good to know where those are located. It's good to be able to create a little grocery shopping list. Hey, I need to go to the Wildspire Waste. I need to go over here. I need to build up my inventory, prepare for the fight, which is another really cool element about these games that you have to, well, you don't have to, but it benefits you greatly to sit down and plan accordingly. You sit down, okay, I'm fighting this monster. I've never fought him before, but I can, from what I've seen from his design, he looks like he's like a red dragon, like the Rathalos. He looks like he might shoot fucking fire out of his face. Or even in the cutscene that they do show you, he's shooting fire at you. You're like, shit, man, this guy uses fire. My armor sucks to fire. Maybe I have to craft a new armor set. Or if I want to be good at this game, you could also choose to go to the area that he resides in and just research the tracks that he leaves. So you sit down, every monster will leave tracks throughout the map, and you can research them, and you level up their research level. And as you do that, you write notes in your hunter's manual, or your hunter's notes thing, and it will give you information on the monster. What parts of his body are weak to what weapon, what elements he's weak to, and what you get out of what part of the body that you end up breaking for making armor in the future. So it's really helps you to... If you want to, you could sit down, fully research this monster so you can fully understand him and then fully prepare for your next fight. And again, that's not entirely necessary, but there's huge benefits to utilizing those opportunities given to you in the game. And it makes the game much easier down the line if you actually take your time to prepare for every fight. So that's another really cool element that's built into the base game that they've kind of perfected over the years. And it just makes the game so much fun that you really you feel like a fucking monster hunter. You it's not like, oh, I'm a god, I'm a high level, I could run into anything and slay anything in one hit. You're like, no, these things are big as shit. They do a lot of damage, and I have to sit down and prepare for this encounter to make sure that I don't get steamrolled. And I think that's a really cool element of the games as well.
Yeah, that's something I really enjoyed. The only thing that now, this could be me being naive, but one thing that I think that was a little difficult to get around was the multiplayer, specifically trying to play with friends, because I was playing with one dude from the IRG community, and he was about to start a hunt that I already did, but he had not seen all the cutscenes, and it gave me the message that I couldn't join him until he saw the rest of the cutscenes, and I wanted to join him, but it kept giving me messages. And eventually, the only way I was able to join him is he had to give up his SOS flare, and I was able to join him. But it took a while to do it. And I was been reading online message boards, and people are saying that, you know, it's a little convoluted the way you do multiplayer. And, you know, there is ways to all everybody join together and do this, but it just seemed a little... And it could be me not understanding the process or understanding the best way to do it, but I just felt like it was a little difficult to even just strike up doing a hunt together. I felt like it needed to be more, I don't know, clear how it works.
Yeah, so. They do a pretty shitty job at... And for the interesting thing about this is we know that these games have adhered to mostly portable systems. And although they have had a PC MMO and stuff like that, and they've been on older consoles, but these are like the first like steps into modern consoles with like open connectivity and stuff like that. So it is like their first step out into basically, oh, hey, we actually have an infrastructure for the online gaming. We don't have to create our own, really. We can utilize PlayStation's internet. We could, or PlayStation's network. We could utilize the Xbox network to get players connected and stuff like that. So they had to kind of build a system. And I understand they do kind of a crappy job of explaining it to you entirely. And for the thing, the only knock that I have is with the cutscene thing. It is kind of weird. I don't know. I can't understand that because I'm not a video game developer. But how hard is it to just, when someone's viewing a cutscene, everyone else in the lobby is paused while that cutscene plays. And then when the cutscene's done, you continue from wherever the host is, and then now everyone's fighting the monster. And I know if you just sit there and wait long enough, wait till they watch the cutscene and the monster's introduced, you're good to go. You can just hop right in and then you're in. But yeah, it is kind of weird. I like the squad system. I think it's pretty cool that you can create like a little guild with like 50 people in it, and that if you just go to start the game, you just go to your squad and it will create a server, and then now you have a server for everyone in your squad. Well, up to 16 people that everyone can just hop into, and then everyone can quest separately. You don't have to have everyone in the same mission. You can have 8 people in your squad, 8 people in the PlayStation party, everyone talking, joking with each other, and then just everyone kind of doing their own thing to level themselves up, which I think is kind of cool in a way that everyone has their own like private server of like 16 people that you can just kind of run around. Or if you want to do it openly, you can just join a random 16 lobby thing. When I play on my own, I do that because I like going to the gathering hub, looking at other people. A lot of the times, for the most part, my experiences with the in-game chat, I haven't had a lot of people that were like talking openly on the mic, because if you're in a server, the mic is broadcasted across everything. So if you have 4 people on a hunt all talking to each other in the in-game chat, everyone else in the server will hear it, which is interesting. But like, we had one where I had like 6 or 7 people in the gathering hub, and we were all just chilling. Some people were sitting at the canteen. There's a couple dudes arm wrestling each other. Some dudes like actually literally talking to, it felt like an actual gathering hub. And I know that's not an experience that everyone will get, because it's just not something that you come across often, but it felt like there's a bunch of monster hunters all together talking, just chilling. Yeah. We had again, some guys playing with the arm wrestling barrel and just people just messing around and hanging out. And I thought that was really cool. We had one time where people were calling people up to the gathering hub, and everyone sat down to have a meal together, and everyone just sat down and ate together. I wasn't even going on a hunt. I was trying to make armor, and I just sat down to eat with them because I thought it was cool that we're all just sitting together eating food. And it felt like almost something, again, like out of like a shonen anime, like fairy tale or something, where everyone's just chilling like in the lobby and like eating together and just fucking around. And I thought that was really cool. But I do understand where you're coming from. And for newcomers, for the most part, the game does an okay job of explaining it's the way the game works to newer players. But I do felt like if they have articles all over the place saying, here's how you play with a friend, I think you kind of failed in that category as a game developer for explaining how it works. I think the system itself is cool, and I like how it works, but I do feel like they did a bad job explaining it. I think what would make it even better is if the gathering hub was everywhere. So anywhere in Astera, when you're walking around, all 16 people can be seen, kind of like Destiny.
Right.
And I know a lot of people like to compare things to Destiny because it was kind of new in its like realm of like a social loot-based shooter, kind of almost like on the tiers of an MMO that was an FPS. So a lot of people like to compare stuff to Destiny. So I could understand why we might feel spoiled about certain aspects of Destiny, of having like a really big social hub that people can just run around and do stuff.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I do like the way their multiplayer works. The cutscenes do kind of annoy me because I have to sit there and wait. If I'm taking a friend that's behind me through the game, I have to sit there like, okay, watch the cutscene and then I'll join you. And then we just fight after that. But I think the game really does shine when you're playing with a full team of 4. Everyone's working on making their characters better, and everyone's just hunting monsters together. You really run into some funny moments. Like I had one where I was playing with just random bunch of dudes, and one dude had a hammer. And when you spin the hammer, you can hit each other. You won't damage each other, but you can like knock each other up. you can fuck with each other, kind of.
Yeah.
The monster had fallen over. We had knocked him down. We stunned him. And I was just going ham on him because I used the dual blades. So just fucking straight up cutting him up, dicing him. And he was swinging the hammer, and at the end of it, if you hit triangle, you'll go for like an upward uppercut, right? So I'm just chilling there, and we're at the top near the lair of the monster, and this man just spins, smacks me up in the air, and knocks me all the way down to the bottom of the map. Just fucking catapults me all the way down. I'm like, what the fuck? I didn't even know what happened. I was like so confused. It was ridiculous, but
that's hilarious.
But just like having a bunch of friends come together to do like work together to kill this monster, especially like I don't know, because in the earlier games, they'd have really difficult hunts in the end game, like really difficult. And I hope that they have. I haven't gotten there yet, but I hope that when we move around there, because like I had times where I had, we're all on our 3DS, we were all playing together, and we'd all just be like, okay, you're gonna be focusing his tail, you're focusing his head. Let's all grab this like one specific weapon that's super. That he's super weak against, or this one element that he's super weak against, let's all prepare. And then we'd all just like walk into it like A-team style, all set up and ready to go. And I hope that down the line that that is still like an element. It's not like too easy. There's like just like really difficult fights down the line that like you have to prepare for and have everyone on the same page kind of, so you can all work together and kind of just support each other in killing this monster, especially when the fights take so long. And you're really, it's like, it's almost like a boss, like a raid boss rush mode kind of, because everything takes so hard, so long to kill everything. And on top of that, they're like really big, difficult monsters that you have to work against or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah.
So do you have, okay. We touched upon the combat, touched upon the multiplayer. Do you have a favorite set? Or what set are you wearing right now? Do you have a complete set?
I don't have a complete set. I'm just kind of running with, I believe I have the bone set. I could probably get better sets, but I need to do some farming. But right now, I don't have like the best optimized equipment. I'm just sort of just doing, just getting stuff with, you know, relatively good defense and, you know, a little bit of variety and, like, you know, resistances. So I'm eventually going to get a set that I'm comfortable with, but right now I have it's pretty okay. Like I said, I'm running with the bow. I've got an iron bow 3 right now. Hopefully when I get some more materials, I can unlock some more bows and get to the pretty crazy ones that, you know, have a higher attack, of course, and then give me the elemental stuff so I can switch in between those. But right now I'm going to be working towards it, and eventually I will have a set that I'm happy with that gives me good, you know, stats and gives me good skills and skill boosts and stuff like that, which is another thing I really enjoy, is that each item, these items have different boosts and different buffs. Like some will have attack boost, some will have better stealth. Some will make your palico a little bit better. Some will give you different abilities. So I really enjoy that aspect, is that, you know, not only are you looking for stat-wise good items or a good set, but you're also looking to have different abilities, which ones will give you more attack or give you better speed or defense. So that's one aspect that I liked, and then I believe eventually you can actually merge them or increase the boosts somehow. I think I saw a video somewhere.
The way a lot of sets, as you move further down, they have like set bonuses. You have a certain amount of items from this one set, you get the bonus that the set provides, like you'd see in other RPGs. They do stuff like that. So you can have a set that you have three pieces of one armor set, and it gives you that buff, and like how many pieces of armor do you have? You have your helmet, your chest, your arms, your like weird pants, then your boots. So that's five. So I guess you could have like a 3 and a 2 buff. I don't know if I'm pretty sure they have some stuff like that. I haven't really, again, we're not end game yet, but
right.
The way the skills work, not the set skills, but just the bonus ones like critical eye, fast sheath, quick sharpening, stuff like that, is if you have it on one piece of armor, you get level 1. But if you have it on another piece of armor that you're currently wearing, it will jump to level 2.
Right.
And then it goes, et cetera, et cetera. And every level increase gives you bonuses. And the cool thing is the charms will come into play, and also the decorations, which are basically like little mods you could put on the armor, will come into play as well to boost those skills. So like the set I have, it's the Ode to Garen set. It makes you look like a Chinese like ninja kind of, like a dragon warrior. It's really cool, especially on the female. It's a badass looking set, but it reduces bleeding damage. It gives you a critical eye level 1, which is an increased crit chance, and you get speed sharpening and quick sheathing. So it's really good for the dual blades because you're just attacking. So I'm going to build critical eye up and keep leveling it through charms and stuff like that. So I have a really high crit chance on my dual blade since I'm hitting so often. That crit chance will proc so often, especially since the sharpness on like the longsword dual blades are not very good because it's designed to balance the weapon out. You have to sharpen more often than people that are using like a greatsword or stuff like that because you're just hitting so many times. So it's definitely, you'll find sets as you move forward that will kind of adhere to certain weapon archetypes as you move forward. And I just love how a lot of the weapons, they just... Some of them look so badass. Like that one thing you can do with the long sword where you'll like thrust forward and then you'll like kick off the monster and jump up in the air and come down with the katana. It'll just be like, it'll give like this weird like slice effect and it just hits like seven times. Yeah. That shit is so badass. Or even like, I don't know if you've seen it, but the dual blades, if you're in Archdemon mode or if you're in Demon mode or Archdemon mode, which are like buffs that you get that... Well, Demon mode, the way it works is you throw up your swords and your stamina will start to drain. And as you attack with Demon mode, you have a different move set. If you do enough damage in Demon mode, you'll unlock Archdemon mode. And in Archdemon mode, you don't have to do the... Well, you can do it, but you don't have to do the stamina draining attack. You can just... You have a different move set even without it with Demon mode activated. But when you're in Demon or Archdemon mode, if you're on any incline, if you hit circle, you'll like swing your swords up and start to slide on your ass and you'll do a jump and you literally like Beyblade along the like the spine of the monster. And it is so fucking badass looking, like straight up like Levi out of Attack on Titan level spinning and you just go right down the spine of the monster. Like, I watched a video of someone doing that, and they killed the monster that way. It looks so cool. And, oh my god, it was so awesome. But, like, there's so many things. And even if it comes down, all the weapons do mad damage later on. You just have to know how to utilize them. Even things like the charge blade, that thing's so cool, where you, like, stick the shield on your sword, and it fully extends into, like, a great axe and shit like that.
Yeah.
Just, they're so cool, and they're so unique in the way that they work and how you... They have like different layers of complexity and how you just learn to use them. Really cool stuff. So, what else is there? Like, I was thinking of the story again, it's nothing to write home about. I'm glad there is one. Usually there is something that you can work towards. I like the fact that the cutscenes are badass for the most part. Like your character just overall is a class A badass. I like having cutscenes with your customizable character in them. Even though your character doesn't necessarily talk, it's cool to see that they will make expressions and you can choose what expressions they make in those times in the cutscenes when you're creating the character. So that's really cool. And it's nice seeing what you've been working for kind of shown off in the cutscenes. I think that's cool. So thinking, what else is there? We pretty much touched on everything.
Pretty much.
We haven't really gotten to endgame yet, but I'm definitely really invested in this game. It's hard because like I have people playing like Final Fantasy, so I'm trying to play with them every once in a while just so they know that I haven't completely abandoned them for Monster Hunter. But then I have some people on Monster Hunter that want to play, and I'm like, fuck, so I'm like balancing the two. But recently I was playing, just to kind of go off topic real quick, I was playing Final Fantasy 14. And I beat the base game story before any of the expansions. And I was moving forward, and there's like a shitload of bullshit quests that you do in between the main base game and you move to your first expansion, which is Heavensward. And it, like, I'm telling you, could not be less than 80 quests I did that were all just involved, like being an errand boy, you know, typical MMO quests. You go talk to someone, do something, something like that. And so I sat down like, I want to get this special class that I can only get in this new area. It's in the expansion. And Sean was telling me, he's like, dude, you got a shitload of stuff to go through. And I'm like, fuck. So I sat down one day and just blew through as much of it as I could. And I recently, I got to this new city, Ishgard, and I found the quest. And basically, I'm a tank. Although I have everything technically, so I can fill, because the way Final Fantasy works is it's all based of whatever weapon you have equipped. So you could build gear sets. So you could have every class in the game at level 70 on one character, and you could just swap between them at will if you want. So I'm working through, I was a gladiator, which evolves into a paladin, which moves into a dark knight later on in the game. But they like fucked me over because you have to get to 50 and then get to Ishgard, and you got to get something to 50 to get to Ishgard. And then you get to Ishgard, and when you get the Dark Knight, they take away 20 levels.
Oh, wow.
When I equipped the Dark Knight, I dropped to level 30. And I'm like, what the fuck? So all the quests that I've been doing all this time just to get up to 50, I lose those 20 levels, and now I don't have anything to do except like spam dungeons to get those 20 levels back. And I'm like, oh my God, are you serious? So I worked my ass off to get that far. And I mean, I haven't lost anything technically, but this is the class I want to play. I don't want to keep playing Paladin, because then I'm leveling a class I don't give a shit about. I want to play Dark Knight because they're badass. Or is it Dark Knight or Black Knight? I think it's Black Knight. I don't know.
Yeah.
And they're badass as hell. I want to use them. They have cool abilities. They just use one sword instead of a sword and shield. They just look cool. And I like their end game armor. So I have to like sit down one day this week, because I have a couple days off from work, and just fucking grind it to get it back up to 50. And yeah, it pissed me off, because all my friends that are playing, we got like 6 or 7 people playing the game, just doing stuff, you know, hanging out. And they all received a buff called Path to 60, and it gives you like two to four times the experience till you're level 60. And there's only 70 wow. levels in the game. So they're just flying past me, because I got it at the start, but I have it on a character that I don't want to play. Because when I started, I picked Pugilist, which is like a punchy class, because I thought it'd be cool. Hey, I punch shit. But then it was kind of boring. It was getting boring.
Right.
And so I switched. Now, I didn't know. I just completely forgot about the Path to 60. And I'm like, why the fuck do all these guys have this shit? And I don't. And I remember, I look at my Pugilist, like level 17. And he's level, and he's all the way down there. And I don't want to level him up. Because then now I have, because the buff can traverse your other characters, but you have to get one character high enough first, and then it will like move to your low level characters. But right. I don't want to sit there and get Pugilist to 60. So I'm just like begrudgingly pushing forward, knowing that I have a 4x buff sitting on a character I'm not using. And it's so shitty, because now I'm level 30, so I've lost even more progress, and yeah. my friends are still pushing past me. I'm like, fucking son of a bitch. And then now Monster is out, so I don't even care anymore. But but I really enjoy that game. It's pretty for an MMO, which is nice. So it's definitely enjoyable. I'm glad that we have a bunch of people playing it. And my favorite part about it is it's cross-play. So you can have someone sitting on a PS4, someone sitting on a PC, and you guys can be playing together, because Sean's a nub that only has a PlayStation 4. So this gives us a way to play with him while still playing on PC.
Right.
So definitely interesting. But I'm glad that, again, Monster Hunter's out, having a shitload of fun with it. It is so cool to just happy to be back, I guess, and happy for it to be in the state that it's in, being pretty, being on PlayStation, everyone's loving it, everyone's talking about it. It's just such a nice time, especially for long fans of the series, to like see all these new people like just delve into it, and it kind of just gives you that nostalgic feel the first time that it hits you, almost. And you're sitting back on the PSP like, wow, this game's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Or on the 3DS with all my friends, like, wow, this is so much fun. And now that we get to the point where everyone's all about it, it's just so cool. It's the same feeling for Persona. When Persona came out last year, everyone was all on Persona 5's dick. And I'm like, I've been telling you fuckers for the past 10 years that this series is awesome. And now we have such a huge, I don't want to say resurgence, because it's never been big, but like such a huge coming about that Persona had and the Shin Megami Tensei series has. So it's really cool just to see everyone. That's my favorite part about games is when you can share experiences with people and everyone's sharing those experiences, it just gives you that like feeling that these complete strangers or people that aren't necessarily strangers over the internet are everyone's kind of just enjoying something together. It's just a nice feeling. And it's something that you can kind of only experience with games, which is really cool.
It really is. And, you know, I think with these games like Monster Hunter, Persona, a lot of them were, Japan, I don't want to say Japan exclusive, but they were more catered to a Japanese market. And now that you have the openness of the internet and people embracing more of the culture, you have more people accepting these games and wanting to play these games because, one, they're really fun, they're made very well, and overall, it just seems to be more of a different experience, you know, instead of having to, you have these Call of Duties and Halos and stuff. Not saying those are bad games, but, you know, once in a while, you want to play a game that's a little bit different. It's a little bit of a variety. And now that we have that, you know, you see the Japanese market releasing games and localizing games for the Western audience. And I think that's a great thing in that, you know, hopefully we'll see more of it being a universal or worldwide release instead of it just starting in Japan and then coming over. Like I know one of the first signs was the Pokemon X and Y released worldwide on the same day. And I thought that was really cool. It was like, hey, you know, you guys love Pokemon, so we're going to release it. Everybody gets it at the same time instead of it being released in Japan first and then being released everywhere else. So I'm really excited to see what other franchises that may have been in Japan for a long time that came over here that, you know, maybe we'll see them have a worldwide release, you know, maybe the next Persona game or, you know, Shin Megami Tensei will release at the same time as it does in Japan. So that's something to look forward to. And I'm really excited about what the future holds for these types of games.
Yeah, definitely. So that's the moral of the story. Monster Hunter is fucking cool. If you, again, if you're kind of on the edge, you never played the game before, it does a very good job of catering to newer players. It gives you a good idea of what you're supposed to be doing, although there's a lot to do, so it can feel a little bit overpowering at some points. But for the most part, again, this is a very good starting point if you've never played the games before. So I do recommend it if you like fighting fucking big-ass monsters and decking out a character with cool-looking gear, then this is something that's right up your alley, especially with the way the combat feels good. It's fun, very satisfying, and I cannot recommend this game series enough, even if you feel like delving back into the earlier versions of the game and just testing out the waters. Some people still believe that Freedom 2, I think it's Freedom 2 or Freedom, is one of the best games in the series, so I don't know if it's Freedom or Freedom 2. I never finished Freedom. Some of the games, no one's finished. Like,
right.
They get to a point, like, some of the more recent games have, the Hunter rank goes to 999.
Oh my gosh.
And people still haven't reached that yet, which is insane when you think about
it. Yeah, that's crazy.
And I've heard, and from achievements alone and some other things, we know that the Hunter rank in this is at least 100, if not higher. So definitely got a ways to go. All the monster designs, everything, it feels like a quality product. And I've never come across any bugs. Again, I have a normal PlayStation. It's probably like a year two, year three PlayStation. And it runs the game just fine. Maybe sometimes when you got like 3 to 4 monsters like duking it out or shit like that, then sometimes the frames get a little iffy. But for the most part, if you're just fighting one monster, just kind of exploring, it's very well optimized. It works well. And I think Digital Foundry even released a video on it. So you guys can go check that out if you want to see its performance before you pick up the game. Especially since PC release is like 6 months out, something along those lines. So I feel bad for people that are like dedicated to the Master Race kind of thing, where they don't have any consoles and now they got to wait 6 months to play the game.
Yeah.
It kind of sucks. So, but I'm interested to see what it looks like on what the port will be like, because besides the MMO, that would be like the first port of a game to PC. And now that developers are starting to see that a pretty decent chunk of the gaming populace uses PCs to play games, they want to get in to those wallets, basically. So they're starting to make ports for that. So it's interesting to see all these companies test their might with the PC ports. So hopefully it has a good port. Because I just want, again, more people talking about it. Although you PC players will be late as fuck down the line. Like, people like sitting here like late October or some shit. Yo, Monster Hunter World's fucking legit, dude. I'm like, yeah, we've been playing this game for the past 5 months, dude. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Nothing against it. I am a member of the PC Master Race, and I enjoy having a PC. It sucks that if you only have a PC, you have to wait that long to play such a good product.
But at least you're not like annoying about it and just keep on crapping console users.
I have nothing. I don't believe in like the whole console war debate, although I believe competition's good for everyone, because then the harder companies work to give us better quality products, we have better quality products, and we don't really have to do anything except pretend like we care. Although a lot of people do actually give a shit, which I find ridiculous. But I'm just happy to have all these avenues to play games, because the PC has a huge market of things like indies and stuff along those lines, and just some things you can't get on console. So it just gives me more of an avenue to play games. That's all I see it as, really. Although it is nice to play stuff like Origins in like 60 FPS. I never tried it in 4K because I don't have a 4K monitor yet. But my 1080 could probably do 4K. I just don't know how many frames it'd be pulling, especially in Assassin's Creed. That gaming is big as it is. But even in 1080p, 60 FPS, everything on Ultra, holy shit, what a gorgeous game. Like, it is so pretty. And it is fantastic. I recently finished that. I don't know if I said that, but that game was really good. The story was I think I said all this already, but it was a good game. So, again, that was our main topic. Talk a little bit about Monster Hunter. We're all super excited that it's finally here, learning about it, ready to go back hunt some monsters. I'll be doing it tonight after we finish this podcast. So, let's move on to our news. Talk a little bit about... Actually, we skipped so much shit. Let's do the housekeeping real quick. So, if you guys feel like you want to connect with the people at the Thought Patrol podcast, we have a couple avenues for you to do so. We have a Discord, as we've stated before. If you feel like coming in, saying hi to other members of the community, checking out the hosts, things like that, you'll see all that in the description below. If you feel like anything that we said, if you love Monster Hunter, you absolutely hate it, the hitboxes on the Anjanath are bullshit, which I agree with. Feel free to drop a comment below on the YouTube channel, where is technically kind of like our main hub. We do Let's Plays, other things like that on YouTube. You can check us out over there as well. Feel free to subscribe on YouTube as well. Even if you do it just for the shits and giggles and you don't watch any of our videos because they're horrible quality or whatever, that is completely fine with me. But anything that gets us to a point where we can have more people come to the channel and hang out with everybody together, that's fine by me. We also have, or you could also subscribe on any of the podcasting services you're listening to. We have Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play. I think we have iHeartRadio. I'm not entirely sure, but I don't know how many people use that. I know one of the bigger things is Spotify, so I'm really happy that we're there. And iTunes isn't iTunes anymore. It's like Apple Podcasts or some shit. But we're in a couple places, so you could take us wherever. Masturbate to our voices. That's what I do, especially when Sean speaks. Man, that man gets me going. And if you want to get updates from the crew, we do have a Twitter. We drop right now, it's just a thing, announcements pretty much, but if we down the line we prepare like stream nights or want to hang out with you guys, all that will be on Twitter. And if you really want some brownie points with the Thought Patrol crew, feel free to leave an iTunes review. It will get read on the podcast, so don't be racist. Don't be racist or anything. We'll be happy to read on the podcast. So again, no game segment because we're kind of strapped for time. Hopefully I could get everyone back for next week. We could continue the shit list. I think we're like 3/4 of the way. You know what? I was thinking about today. I was at work. I'm getting the urge back. It's been too long. We need to bring back Kyle Ruins. So I need to delve into the interwebs, find another horribly graphic fan fiction, and start reading it again. I feel like that we've had enough time. Everyone's settled down, and I think I could bring it back. I have to be careful not to shit over Sean's fucking childhood memories, I guess. So let's move on to our actually box office tops real quick. Talk a little bit about the movies, how they've been doing. This is for the weekend of February 2nd to the 4th. This is Monday of the 5th that we are recording this. At number one, we have Jumanji still. Welcome to the Jungle. sitting at first place for $10 million, with a total gross of $352 million, with a budget of $90 million on its seventh week. It is still in the theaters at its seventh week, which is crazy. At number two, we have Maze Runner, The Death Cure, pulling in $10 million for the week. Excuse me, for the week, with a total of $40 million, sitting at a budget of $62 million on its second week. At number three, we have Winchester, which is new to the box office, pulling $9 million for the weekend, with a total gross of $9 million. Winchester, was that a horror movie?
Yes.
Was it about Madam, the lady that created the Winchester? Because yes. I remember they had like this whole, like, I don't know if it was real, but it was like a rumor that like she was haunted. Was she the one that built that fucking insane house that had like a, or was that someone else? You know what I'm talking about?
I'm not sure. I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
There was a woman that built a house and she just kept building it until she died because like the spirits told her to. So it just had like, you can actually visit it. It just has like random like staircases into the roof, and then there's like doors on the roof, and it just looks like a fucking crazy place, kind of. I don't think that was her. But I know they said she was haunted by, because she created guns that ended up killing people or some shit like that. So I guess that's what it's about. I had no want to see that movie. So I remember seeing that. What's his name? I don't remember his name, but I watch him. He does the moist meter thing. You know who I'm talking about?
I think so, yeah.
Fuck, what's his name? Is it Critical? I think that's his name. I think it's Critical. I don't know if he still goes by that name. But he does like a thing called moist meter where he talks about just media and he reviews it. Moist meter. It actually gave me a moist meter. Yeah, it's his YouTube is Penguin Zio, but I think he goes by Critical.
Yeah.
And he basically talks about films. I didn't watch it, but it just popped into my head. But yeah. At number four, we have The Greatest Showman, pulling in $7 million at a total of $137 million with a budget of $84 million on its seventh week. And at number five, we have The Post, pulling $5 million, sitting at $67 million with a budget of $50 million, also on its seventh week. Not too much going on with movies right now. A lot of the movies are old, on their last leg on the way out. Last Jedi is sitting at 15, pulled $2 million, sitting at $614 million for the for total. But yeah, a lot of the newer films that came out, like Fantastic Woman, Till the End of the World, Bilal, I don't know what that is, New Breed of Hero, Before We Vanish, 24 Frames, all these are like in the 30s to 50s. None of these new movies are pulling any revenue. So, definitely interesting. Everyone's just kind of in preparation. We're in a slow period as we move into eventually summer blockbusters, which really isn't even a thing anymore. A lot of it is just people, they release their movies whenever. We really don't, I mean, there still are some, but we really don't see like where summer's like where all the big hitters happen.
Right.
It's like it kind of just starts at summer and then it slowly teeters into winter, especially with Disney throwing all their shit out. Near the end of the year and stuff like that. So it kind of just extended the summer blockbuster into the second half of the year blockbusters and stuff like that. So that's how the box office is doing. So let's move into our news. Actually, no. God, I should probably read the notes before I say stupid shit. Let's move forward. We have our What to Look For segment. We got a couple games coming out over the next week that you guys have to look forward to. Tomorrow, on the 6th, we have Shadow of the Colossus coming to the PS4, which is a fantastic pickup. If you have not played it yet, I highly recommend it. On the 8th, we have Civilization VI Rise and Fall, which is an expansion. Civilization VI Rise and Fall coming to PC. We have Dragon Quest Builders coming to the Switch on the 9th of February. We have The Seven Deadly Sins Knights of Britannia coming to the PS4 on February the 9th. And we have Under Night and Birth EXE Latest. I have no idea what the fuck that is. It sounds like an anime game. Coming to the PS4, PS3, and Vita on the 9th. So those are the games you have to look forward to before we move into next week. So with that out of the way, now we're going to move on to our news. Talk a little bit about the happenings over the past week. And first, we're going to start with Rainbow Six Siege has teased its new operators and the Outbreak event that is on its way. Ooh, bless you. I could tell you're a little under the weather over there, mister.
No, I'm fine. Just had a little allergy problem. Go ahead.
Okay. So... year three is technically in its workings starting for Rainbow Six Siege. All of you out there that do play it. We have the new operators have been teased for the start of year three and the outbreak event, which is basically their zombies mode, has been detailed. So this is by Kevin Knezovic of GameSpot. We have, you're sharing your phlegm with me. Oh, goodness. Sorry about that. The start of Rainbow Six Siege's third year of content is quickly approaching, kicking off next month with the Operation Chimera update and the Outbreak event. Ubisoft announced the first details about Outbreak earlier this week, and now the publisher has shared a cryptic trailer that sheds more light on the mysterious threat that awaits players. Outbreak is a free event that's much different from anything else in Rainbow Six Siege. The event is set in the town of Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, which has been quarantined after the outbreak of a, quote, infestation of unknown origin. The infestation is actually the apex parasite, which has come to Truth or Consequences. What a stupid name for a town. Truth or Consequences via a mysterious space capsule that crashed near the town. Those who are infected by the parasite turn into monsters, and it falls to players to keep it from breaking out of the quarantine zone. Outbreak begins on PS4, Xbox One, and PC on March 6th and runs for 4 weeks. Players will be able to team up with two friends in the event, which features three exclusive co-op-oriented maps that are larger and, quote, more open than the game's typical PvP maps. Being designed for co-op, they are also more linear and feature a clear sense of progression, Ubisoft said in an update on the game's official website. Nevertheless, the destruction and multi-path approach that are iconic to Rainbow Six Siege are still very much present. Have you seen the trailer, Sam?
I haven't.
It looks interesting, and there's something, and it felt, we had kind of something like that with, that I thought about with The Division when that came out, is a lot of the time with like the Tom Clancy products or games that come out of Tom Clancy, you usually don't see things kind of fall into like the supernatural, and I consider zombies supernatural, right? Because they don't exist, obviously. Put on your tinfoil hat. but I would never have thought something like a disease related survival thing coming to Rainbow Six Siege. So that's definitely interesting that they're doing something now that they've had so many people come into with the like revival that Siege has had. It's definitely interesting. I don't know what this event will bring. It'd be cool if they had like special skins that you can get or something through playing the event instead of it just being a game, kind of like something that Overwatch does. So it's got me excited. I do play the game on a semi-regular basis. Whenever we have a bunch of people on, we'll all get together and play Siege on PC. Very fun. One of my favorite FPS games that I play currently. I like it a lot. And I'm super excited for this and the new operators. And I think the... going a little further down the article... Oh, man. They have also revealed a list of playable operators during the event. Oh, this is interesting. I should have finished the article. Not every operator's skill is suited for the new event. Ubisoft has narrowed the list down to a, quote, selection of operators who are the most adapted and relevant for this specific game mode. Though the publisher didn't specify if you need to own the operators in order to use them in the event. In addition, two new operators have been introduced in Operation Chimera. Everyone will be able to play as the following. You can play as Smoke, Ying, Buck, Capcan, Ash, Doc, Tachanka, Lord Chanka, and Glaz. Outbreak will also introduce an exclusive line of cosmetic items. I just need to read the article instead of speculating, which will only be available for the duration of the event. The Outbreak collection consists of 50 unique items, including weapon skins, headgear, charms, and more. Ubisoft says that players will receive no duplicate items when opening packs, and you could read more about that on their website. So definitely some exciting stuff. Looking forward to that on March 6th. I couldn't fucking find it. But also the operators got me pumped too. I'm super excited for that. Sam, have you ever tried out Siege?
No, I've only watched. I haven't yet bought it yet or done it, but I definitely watch it. It's a really interesting game. I really want to get into it eventually.
Yeah, it's definitely fun. I like, it's definitely, although other games have done stuff like that, especially PUBG, that like feeling of being like vulnerable and at a point where if you're not properly barricaded or whatever, you can have like you can go from being just normal fine to being like completely shitting your pants based on what's going on. And with the amount of different operators and stuff like that, every game plays out so differently.
Yeah.
It's insane how often, I mean, you'll have an idea of what's going to happen. Like, obviously people are going to come to you. You got to win your gunfights. But it's so much fucking fun, especially with a full group of people, everyone working together to talk and be like, oh, hey, he's coming from upstairs, or I saw him on this camera over here, mm-hmm. or they shot out these cameras over here, or let me throw in a drone and scout out the room ahead of you. It definitely feels like the original like Rainbow Six games that had that, but just single player, they brought that experience to a multiplayer environment.
Yeah.
And that makes it so much more tense. Because you're not just shooting people that have a cone to see you. You're playing against mm-hmm. real people, and it's crazy.
Yeah.
So definitely super fun game. And I know that you've talked about looking into the Master Race and joining us at one point or another. And if you do end up doing something like that, that'd be a fantastic game to start with, because it's fun as hell. And especially with just normal cooperative, what am I trying to say here? Normal, like, competitive shooters, something you hop in a game when you have some time, you spend it throughout, you just play it throughout the night, drop a couple hours, there's no like heavy commitment kind of stuff like mm-hmm. that, so it helps yeah. out a lot of people play it. It's fun. All right, a little bit older news, but we never covered it, so we're going to talk about it here. We have Red Dead Redemption 2's release date has been updated on PS4 and Xbox One. This is by Tamar Hussein of GameSpot. Rockstar Games has confirmed the Red Dead Redemption 2 will launch on Xbox One and PlayStation 4 on October 26th of 2018. The announcement was made on the official Rockstar Games blog, where the company apologized for a delay. The game was originally due out in spring, following an earlier delay from fall of 2017. According to Rockstar, this new delay affords the studio extra time to improve the game. They always say that. That is always the reason behind it. And again, with the amount of games that we have right now, it doesn't really matter to me.
Yeah.
And I think that if this is really the reason we got to sit down and polish the game some more, that's completely fine by me. If it's because Rockstar, they do have quite a pride in their products, and seeing this game just be as good as possible, I'm definitely down with that. So since we have so much other stuff to do right now, so it's really not a big deal to me.
Yeah.
I don't even know what I'm picking this up on. Because I don't think I'm going to give a shit about the multiplayer, but I don't want to be wrong about that and actually do give a shit about the multiplayer, but then only have it on PC. And I mean, mm-hmm. I'm sure there'll be other people like kind of play with, but for the most part, I'll be kind of alone in that effort. So,
yeah,
because I try to keep single player games to a PC. It's like Wolfenstein, uh-huh. PC, Assassin's Creed Origins, PC, because I feel like the graphical fidelity, the increased performance, all that stuff is really nice in a single player game where mm-hmm. you don't have to worry about being able to play with someone else.
Right.
Because all my friends are still pretty much on PS4 for the most part. I do have a couple on PC that I talk to on a regular basis, but man, I keep wandering off. So yeah, it's been delayed. They continued by saying, "We sincerely thank you for your patience and hope that when you get to play the game, you will agree that the wait will have been worth it. In the meantime, please check out screenshots from the game." No one gives a fuck. In May 2017, they got new screenshots. So basically, game's been delayed. This almost always happens. This is Rockstar's track record. They set a release date. It gets delayed. It happened with GTA 5. How many times did GTA 5 get delayed? It was like 2 to 3 times, right?
Yeah, I think so.
It got pushed back a shitload of times. And then we're seeing it happen again. Hopefully, this is the final pushback. Hopefully, as we get closer to October, we'll see that the game goes gold and we'll have a game for the end of the year to play, depending on what comes out. Because as of right now, I don't really know anything super big coming out around that time, besides like another Call of Duty or something maybe.
Yeah.
I haven't played Call of Duty in forever, so I don't really know how they still do that. Usually it's a game a year, right? And it comes out near Christmas, so the Christmas kiddies can get it and stuff like that. Damn, they must fucking Activision makes so much bank. It's insane.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
If only I could have like 1%. 0.01%, I would take it.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. See, that's that. Again, we got another delay. I guess I could say I'm excited about this game. I mean, I liked the first one. I thought it was good. But I'm not like shaking in my fucking underwear thinking about trying not to soil it, thinking about this game coming out.
Right.
I'm just not in that state of mind, I guess.
When it gets closer to the release date, I think the hype will be a little bit more real. And once they release some little more gameplay trailer, because they haven't really seen any gameplay trailers at all. They've only shown cinematics and part of the story. So maybe when they release more information, it'll probably get people to see if they're more excited about it or if they're like, just meh about it.
Yeah. Definitely see what happens as it gets closer. I kind of see this being huge waves as we get within like the realms of like August, September. People are going to be shitting themselves getting excited. So, I don't know. Again, I don't really have like a huge connection to the first one. I enjoyed it, but it wasn't like my favorite game of all time kind of thing. So, I'm definitely getting there though.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
We'll see.
So we have, moving into the next article, we have Final Fantasy XV's PC pre-order bonuses have been announced, and they also released the benchmark tool. So this is Kevin Knezevic of GameSpot. We have Final Fantasy XV makes its long-awaited debut on PC in little over a month. To help players prepare for it, Square Enix has now shared a benchmark tool on its blog, giving you a chance to start optimizing your computer ahead of the game's release. Final Fantasy XV is a beautiful, sprawling game, and those looking to pick up the Windows edition will certainly need a capable rig to get the best experience. You can see minimum and recommended specs, blah, blah, blah. Game was gorgeous on the PlayStation 4. We have discussed our reasons for disliking it on this podcast before, me and Sean being fans of Final Fantasy. But let's, for the pre-order purchases on Steam, Origin, and the Microsoft Store, you'll get a... Oh, that's interesting. You'll net a different pre-order bonus depending on which digital store you choose. Pre-ordering the title from Steam will get you a Final Fantasy XV fashion collection, a pack of t-shirts for Noctis, and grant different buffs. If you purchase the game on Origin, you'll receive a Final Fantasy XV decal selection pack, which contains an assortment of decals for your car, the Regalia. Those who pre-order from the Microsoft Store will get a Final Fantasy XV power-up pack, which gets you the Dodonuki Sword, 10 Phoenix Downs, and 10 Elixirs. In addition to native 4K, HDR, and mod support, I forgot about that. I remember we talked about that a long time ago and how the first mods are going to be them making Cindy naked. I remember that. Holy shit. Oh my gosh. I can't wait to see what kind of mods come out for this fucking game. Because I remember the director straight up saying, almost like he's like relinquishing the torch. He's like, we're giving you this freedom to do what you want, and we know that there's going to be some porno things coming out.
Oh, yeah.
But just please, God forbid, don't do it. I'm almost like how Overwatch handled it.
Yeah.
They're like, don't make porn of our characters, please. We know what happens. Rule 34 is a thing. Just try not to.
Yeah.
And then look at it now. Shit's ridiculously popular in the porno industry or whatever.
Yeah.
The Windows Edition will release with all the DLC released for the PS4 and Xbox One versions, featuring episode Gladiolus, episode Prompto, episode Ignis, as well as the multiplayer Comrades expansion. It also boasts new content in the form of a new dungeon, extra boss fights, and a first-person mode, and an in-game vehicle called the Royal Vessel Boat. This edition will release on March 6th. On that same day, Square Enix is releasing a Royal Edition of the game for PS4 and Xbox One. That will include all the additional content features in the Windows Edition, and those who already own the base game on either console will be able to purchase a Royal Pack upgrade to get the additional content. So, that's that. Final Fantasy XV is coming to PC almost like, how long? Like a year later? If not more?
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
So, if you're looking for a pretty game that has okay combat... the story was really good. Usually Final Fantasy stories are awesome. Music was really good too. It just didn't feel like a Final Fantasy game. But for the most part, the game was a good product. It was fun. And I put my 60 hours into it and I enjoyed it. I spent the time to get that platinum. I remember one of the things is you had to raise all your skills to their max rank. And one of them was like a foraging skill. And the only way you could raise it was by walking. Like you literally just had to walk. By the time I was at 40 something hours into the game, I only had it like rank 4 or 5, and I had to get to 10. And I'm sitting there like, how do I do this? So I straight up, I sat down, I put my controller, plugged my controller in. I left my PlayStation on overnight, and I set up the rubber bands on it to have the sticks face in different directions. So what it will do is it will make me walk to the left but spin the camera to the right, and I just ran in a circle, and by the time I woke up the next morning, like 8 hours later, I was only at level 8. And I'm like, what the fuck? How do they expect you to get it this high? So I eventually left it some more, a couple more hours, and it had ranked up to 10, and I had received the platinum. That was the last trophy I needed. But man, that shit was a bitch. It was ridiculous farming that. I remember having to get the fishing up there too, and that was a pain in the ass. Because like every character had their own special skill to it. Yeah. Once I did that though, I was done with that game. There was still more stuff to do, but I had I don't know what was going on. I had no want to play it anymore. I guess I was just kind of sick of it at that point. Like, because there was more dungeons, end game content, but I just had no want to play it. I don't know why.
Yeah.
So I just trophy hoarded and let it go. So that's that. I don't think I'll be picking that up. I don't know. The mod support has me enticed. I want to see what people start throwing out there, and maybe I'll pick it up depending on that. But that's not till March. And then in March, I don't even know, because in March we got Ni No Kuni 2 coming out too.
Yeah.
And that shit's got me excited as hell as well.
Oh, yeah.
I just rhymed twice. I didn't mean to do that. I'm sorry. So let's move forward. We have the Nintendo Switch's paid online service is launching in September. This is by Eddie Mackick of GameSpot. The Nintendo Switch's paid online service will launch in September of 2018. Nintendo President Tatsumi Kimishima confirmed today during an earnings call. Online play for Switch games has been free since the system launched in March. Initially, Nintendo planned to launch its paid service in fall of 2017, but it was delayed to 2018. At the time, Nintendo announced it will offer memberships for 1 month being $4, 3 months being $8, and 12 months being $20. But it remains to see those... It remains to be seen if those prices are still accurate. By comparison, Xbox Live Gold and PlayStation Plus cost $60 a year. As announced previously, you'll need a membership for online gameplay and online lobby and voice chat through the smartphone app still, while you also have to pay to get some of the eShop deals. Non-subscribers can still access the eShop, of course, and register, manage friends, share screenshots on social media, and access the Switch Parents Controls app. We will report back on details, blah blah blah. So we're getting the paid service finally. Can you see yourself paying for this?
For sure. I mean, if it's going to give me free games, going to allow me to have different experiences or extra, you know, functionality, then yeah. But my problem is that they need to really, hopefully during this time, they'll look at it, maybe do a beta or something and test it out before the full release, because unless you can give us, I don't want to rant here, but unless you can give us built in voice chat and other features that are normal on most devices, then it's going to probably fall flat. Cause they really need to get their crap together with the online functionality. They've always struggled with it. They just need to, I would say, give it to another company or give it to another portion of their company, like give it to the American branch, let them handle the online functionality, because I feel like they just have a problem with technology and, you know, how online functionality works. So, but that's my opinion.
Yeah, I can't see, because like right now, I mean, there's not a lot of games on the Switch, as everyone has said 1,000 times.
Yeah.
But I don't know if our current library justifies paying for the reason to play online. I can't see people justifying that currently, at the very least.
Right.
But with the whole thing where you get games and stuff every month, I can see this almost being like Nintendo's fucking Game Pass, practically, because everyone's paying the money to get the free older games.
Right, right.
Compared to, you know what I hope happens? When this launches... They're keeping it quiet. They're keeping it quiet because they're gonna blow us away. But when this launches, at the same time they launch the virtual console.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping too.
And then if they do that, and then they give you something like, this is not gonna fucking happen. I could see it already. But if they give it, like, if you're a member, you can get like, you, these games are free for this month,
right?
And you can download them, play them, you own them, basically the same thing PlayStation Xbox does, but through the virtual store. I think that'd be a smart idea on Nintendo's part, because now they're giving their games that people want, although the new games are fine, there's nothing wrong with them, Mm-hmm. But on top of that, they don't have to shell out a lot to do this because they know that their library right now is very limited. So this, I think this would be a good step by Nintendo. Launch the virtual console store. Oh, hey, every month you get two to three games for free that you can download and you own to your Switch, and they're connected to your account, and then that would blow everyone away. People would adore that, and that'd be a really good step in Nintendo's part. Now, again, I don't know if I could see this happening, because we know Nintendo has their issues with doing stuff. Also, fucking update the firmware. Give us a internet browser, let us download apps and stuff like Netflix, Crunchyroll. I know they have Hulu on there now. Why Hulu at all things? It should have been Netflix first, in all honesty. Yeah. Most people use Netflix, and we still don't even have an internet browser. Add those things too. Again, if they do all this and just drop this bomb, everyone would fucking blow up. Everyone would be like, Nintendo can do no wrong. My gods have come to me, and I love them. We worship you. We offer this virgin child. We offer this. We offer this virgin to the Nintendo gods, for they have done nothing wrong.
Praise be to Nintendo.
Praise to Nintendo. I will now proceed to stick my dick in my Switch or my Nintendo Labo sex bot, and we will move on. That's what I can see people doing. The world will fucking explode, and everyone will be on Nintendo's dick.
Yeah, we'll just
see. Straight up, that's what's going to happen. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. Hopefully they make the right choice. I'm hoping they do. Let's move on. We got one more article, and we'll call it for tonight. Because, again, we're strapped for time. A little bit over, but that's fine. Last thing, real quick, that's more talking about Nintendo. The Nintendo Switch has outsold the Wii U in just 10 months. This is by Oscar Deus of GameSpot. Nintendo Switch has been on the market for less than 11 months, but it has already outsold its predecessor, the Wii U, sitting at around 12.13 million Switch units were sold during the 9 months ending in December 31st of 2017, with 2.74 million sold during the hybrid console's debut month last March. Overall, this means 14.87 million Switches have been sold by the end of December last year. As of October 31st of 2017, Wii U hardware sales stood at 13.56 million. Barring an unlikely 1.31 million Wii U consoles being sold in November and December, this means the Switch has almost certainly outsold the Wii U. More up-to-date sales figures for the Wii U have not been provided. The Switch sales are not too far off from the GameCube, which sold 21.74 million, but they are still far behind the ultra-successful Wii, which sold around 101.63 million units in its life cycle. Nintendo has also confirmed that Super Mario Odyssey is the console's best-selling game to date. The platformer sold 9 million units up until the end of December. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, which launched in April of 2017, sold 7.3 million, and Splatoon reached 4.9 million by the same date. According to Nintendo, it now has 8 million seller titles for the fiscal year, but includes games published by third parties in this figure. Strong sales of the Switch hardware and software have helped drive huge profit increases for Nintendo. The company's overall revenue was up 176% year-on-year, while profit was up 494%. Switch enjoyed an impressive first year of exclusive games, and blah, blah, blah. So again, everyone's been all over Nintendo. The Switch has been massively successful for the time that it has been out. And I can see something like this hitting Wii levels for the way that it's been marketed, for the fact that, especially with things that are more kid-friendly, like the Labo coming out and other things like this, a couple more Christmases down the line, we may be sitting closer to a Wii-level number at 101 million. But again, Nintendo is blowing it out of the water. That's why we constantly are watching them, and we want to see if they continue to do right. Because again, it is easy to look at the Switch and see that it itself was rushed out. You can see it. You can see it in the way that the UI worked for it and everything about it, the way the infrastructure for the internet is and stuff like that. So they have to do some patching, start bandaging some fuck ups here and there. But I think if they successfully continue to support this console, they can push it into a super seller like the Wii. It's got that drive behind it. People are all over the games that already exist on it, and people were justifying the Switch's purchase with just Breath of the Wild.
Right.
So all they have to do is continue to get people that haven't been able to justify that yet on board with things. And we got Dark Souls coming out for it and a bunch of other shit coming to it. They are continuing to adhere to both the hardcore and what's the other word I was thinking of? Starts with a C.
Casual.
Casual audience. And again, that's not a knock on anyone, but yeah, they're doing a very good job. They're living up to that third party support, kind of. I mean, let's be real. We're not going to see Red Dead Redemption 2 on the Switch because it's not going to be able to run the thing. We can barely fucking get Xenoblade 2 running at 30 frames, and it's got its adaptive resolution where it just turns it into a Nintendo 64 game every couple of minutes because there's too much for it to handle. Yeah. So I can't. Nintendo constantly, it has kind of, I don't want to say it has, but it's kind of given up on just creating a home console and just pushing that out. It's more of about creating something that people might want, and they hit it out of the park with this, basically giving us a tablet with controllers attached to it that could play games. But again, I love the Switch. I have one. I haven't touched it in fucking forever. That thing probably is caked. Yeah. It's caked with dust right now.
Yeah.
But I'm just waiting for something else to come to it. Nice. Right now, I don't really have any excitement for anything. It's kind of like a rainy day, kind of. Maybe one day I go traveling. Hey, I could pick up Xenoblade and play it again. Yeah. I'll be excited to do that. But as of right now, I just don't have any want to touch it, really. Especially since Zelda didn't really chive with me as well as it did with everybody else. And so I have no want to really finish that, even though I bought the damn season pass. and so it's kind of like a rainy day kind of thing.
True.
Plane, I don't really travel. So, but if I do decide to, something like that, it will go out like that.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. So I think that will be it for our episode. We're working with a little bit of time constraints, so it's going to be just a little bit more of a chill episode. We still had our talk. Thank you, Sam, for joining me.
No problem, sir.
As always, before we get out of here, man, let's get some outros for our lovely listeners / viewers. And we'll start with you, as always.
Again, thanks for having me. And as inspiration, may seem like your life's going to crap, you're in a rut, but you can only go up from there. And as always, you have to go beyond your limits, plus ultra.
Indeed, I love that. It'd be so funny if we'd probably get copyright written struck, but like as you're saying that outro, I just put like the one of the songs from the series into you talking, like just in the background. Yeah. Get with a mad ass copyright strike, but that'd be funny.
Sure.
All right. Again, I am happy that you were able to join me, Sam. Thank you all out there for tuning in. Again, feel free to check out our other content that we provide over on YouTube, or feel free to subscribe to the podcasting service that you're listening to. This show comes out every Tuesday at 8 a.m. And we would love to see you guys again. And before we go, I shall leave you with a thought. Alfred Hitchcock did not have a belly button. It was eliminated when he was sewn up after surgery.